We are just days away from the keenly anticipated Soccer World Cup final when the US and the Netherlands will clash on field in France. By any standard, it's been a gloriously successful cup. Packed stadiums, fevered fans, drama on and off the field, and of course a Twitter war between American midfielder Megan Rapinoe and US President Donald Trump. The cup has proved that old adage, people don't watch women's sports, deserves to be put in the bin. They watched in record numbers across Europe, the US, Australia, Latin America and Asia. So you'd think that the players also deserve to be paid properly, but that has not happened. If the US team win on Monday, they'll return in triumph to the States and take up their lawsuit against the US Soccer Federation, demanding that they be paid the same as their male colleagues, who incidentally command smaller audiences and generate much less revenue. Well, Tracy Holmes is an ABC broadcaster and journalist and host of the Ticket podcast. Highly recommend it if you haven't heard it. She's with me in the studio this morning. Good morning to you.
Morning, Hamish.
This lawsuit is extraordinary given the context. Just explain what the women, the US soccer players are pursuing.
Well, in the US, it's probably unique in the world where the women's team, as you mentioned, outranks the men's team, outperforms the men's team, gets more numbers watching, has a much greater domestic league and a focus. We know that a lot of our Australian players play in the Women's National Soccer League in the US, and it's probably up until now been the biggest and the best and the most dramatic and the most supported.
What's the historic reason for it being bigger than the men's game?
Well, this is quite interesting because in America, it doesn't have a culture or a tradition of soccer football as Europe might have. And so they came from, a standing start. Whereas in the European leagues, men have been playing for so long, it's the biggest thing, everybody follows it, everybody's got a team. So when they started in the US, it sort of came out of nothing. And so the women have been able to dictate the style of play, they've taken it in new directions, and they really owned it in a way that the men really couldn't, because there's so much focus on the other leagues and the other games that they play, whether that's baseball or, American football, etc. So the women sort of claimed this space, but as is tradition in sport and other facets in life, the men got all the money, the men got all the focus, the men got all the attention, they earn more money, even though they deliver less in every aspect.
And what's the gap?
It's substantial. It's substantial. So even if we just look at the World Cup itself for a moment, FIFA took great delight in ahead of France 2019 saying, we are taking this very bold move and we're so proud to announce that we are doubling the prize money for women to about $42 million, which is fantastic. But they also gave like a $50 million increase to the men, which took their prize money upwards of $400 million.
Therefore, it's unbelievable.
Widening the gap.
and I mean, it is the people that sort of defend that say, well, you get a much bigger audience for the men's game, therefore the sponsorship is greater. But actually, when you look at the statistics around viewership, I mean, there are still less people, but there is an extraordinary amount of people watching this World Cup, for example.
Yeah, so for example, the USA is going to play the Netherlands in the final. The Netherlands played their semi-final the other night, and there was about one in three people in the Netherlands that watched that game, which is record ratings for them. It was 78% of the audience share,
right?
Which is phenomenal.
And I think they say something like a billion viewers worldwide.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tuning in for the final of this.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I've even noticed here in Australia, and we know that Australia has its issues as well, if we're talking men's sport versus women's sport, but something really has flicked. It really has turned. And there are men now discussing with other men publicly the Women's World Cup. So previously, there might have been some that probably, set the alarm for 1 a.m. or 4 a.m. and got up and watched a game but didn't really tell anybody. But now they're discussing it openly.
And am I right in thinking that there is now something that you can buy as a men's Matildas jersey, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, as a man or a boy, you can walk around with a Sam Kerr jersey on your back if that's what you choose to do. And that also is just a phenomenal shift.
I'm interested to hear what you think is driving that shift. I mean, as a broadcaster, you are someone that has been a huge advocate of sort of equalising the prominence of men's and women's games in all sorts of codes. Is it just about the way the media positions these things? Is there something more to it?
Oh, no, I think the media has a lot to do with it, absolutely, because that sort of drives interest, it drives recognition, but also you have to look at characters like Sam Kerr, because when Sam Kerr leapt into the public mind with her backflips every time she scores a goal, you know, suddenly she was something that we could all just gravitate towards. And I think people like Sam Kerr do so much in just taking things to the next level. And on top of that, if you're doing well, if you're winning and if you're beating world beaters, you know, Australians love that. Australians love nothing more than winning. And, you know, the Matildas stand a better chance of winning than the Socceroos at this point. And that's interesting too, because there have been studies done, and the latest benchmark report has come out, which measures emotional connection to our sporting teams. And the top four out of the top five, four of them are female teams, and the Matildas are now number one.
In terms of football, what role is there for FIFA to play in mandating pay?
Well, a lot more than they're doing at the moment. You know, FIFA's very good at unfurling banners and slogans on the pitch, but when it comes to delivery off the pitch, they kind of go missing in action because they're too busy doing other things, apparently. But, you know, if you just look at the diversity of the women who have been competing here at the World Cup. So, for instance, there are American players and Sam Kerr herself who earn $400,000 plus a year to do what they do. And then you have people like the 22-year-old Thai forward, her name is Suchawaret Nitorong. She said the hardest thing is that she gets no support physically, culturally, socially, or financially. Nothing. And she feels that the only thing that women footballers really get are support from each other. And so the women competing in France have been very vocal in making sure that all of these other issues are raised and discussed and keep being front and centre around these matches in a way that you don't get at a men's World Cup.
And I think something that has been interesting along those lines is the reaction that the US team has had to this kind of Twitter spat between Trump and Megan Rapinoe. You know, often you get one player maybe standing up and saying something, but actually they seem to have all rallied around her, and on the pay, the team is totally united. It's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I also want to give some credit here to the PFA, the Players Association here in Australia, because it's the Australian Association that has led a lot of this. The Australian women's team boycotted playing in America a couple of years ago, which completely turned around pay negotiations here in Australia and got them a big improvement. And the Americans watched on with that and went, this is interesting.
Right.
The PFA has also been in France agitating with FIFA to address this across all women's sports. So
why is the Australian PFA so front-footed about this?
They've been fantastic. So the deputy CEO, Kate Gill, is a former Matildas player, but they did a blueprint a couple of years ago, and they looked at the sport in Australia and said, okay, if we're going to get to the next level, let's, for instance, have a look at the potential for Australia to host a World Cup, and we'll also look at the potential for Australia to win a World Cup. Well, the answer to both of those was the women's game, as opposed to the men's game. So why aren't we investing at least 50% of the available money to that side, given that we can achieve at that level? And so that really did do a lot to shift the thinking. But the Americans have always been very forward, as you know. Athletes, you know, all the way through history, whether it was the 1968 Black Power salute, or whether it was Muhammad Ali or Colin Kaepernick recently. And so the woman you mentioned, Megan Rapinoe, who is one of the co-captains of the American team and has been involved in this Twitter spat with Donald Trump, basically saying, well, if we get invited to the White House, I'm not going.
She used more colourful language than that.
She did. But she was the first white athlete to take a knee in support of Colin Kaepernick's take a knee, which turned into all sorts of drama, got him sacked, and he's never been employed since. So they're very active in this space. Americans always have been.
And intriguingly, she said it was because she was a gay American and the flag didn't represent sort of equality in her mind. It wasn't necessarily a race-based thing.
No, that's right.
So sort of interpreting it for themselves.
Well, no, it started off because she supported, she came out months ago. It was sort of not, not it, it got refreshed because of France 2019. But months ago, she said, no, I'm not going to go because, and she made this very powerful statement. I think you can get it on YouTube or somewhere, where she basically said, I don't have to confront a situation where my relatives are shot by the police, you know, innocently, and there's no ramifications and there's no way back. I don't have to face that because I'm a white woman in America. But I feel for, you know, my black counterparts who do have to deal with this. So that was why she initially took a knee, and then it's developed from that.
So do you think this World Cup changes things?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, even there was a forum that was held all day yesterday. And this was all about, you know, an equality summit. But one of the big talking points and one of the most dramatic has been this new program called hashtag Fearless Football. And it's all aimed around the Afghanistan women's football team, who came out with allegations that their president and numerous others had been sexually abusing them over many years, even rape. Now the president of the Afghan Football Federation has now been banned from FIFA for life. But a lot of this is being led by an American woman who was coach of the team and brought it to light. FIFA didn't react until the media started reporting on it, and then suddenly they took action. But there's still a lot more investigating to be done. And Prince Ali bin Al Hussein of Jordan has been quite remarkable in this space, doing a lot of work. He ran for the presidency of FIFA, but missed out. But he does a lot of work in supporting this kind of grassroots movement where sport is used to make social change. And the women's game truly reflects that at this point.
Tracy Holmes, it's always a delight to have you in. Thank you so much for coming in this morning. Tracy Holmes is an ABC broadcaster and journalist and host of The Ticket podcast.